Welcome to New Rajadan. I hope, I don't know, we got, if you speak English, come over this way, and Maharaji's move over this way, give a little room to the man, and well, let's see how this goes. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Yashodanandana Raja Janarandana Yashodanandana Raja Janarandana Yamuna Kiravana Chari Yamuna Kira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava All glories to the Sama devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Hare Krishna. So, again, welcome to devotees who are visiting New Rajadam, and I hope your stay will be good. I'm sure they'll have nice programs arranged for everybody. Not loud enough? I'll stay on this side, be a little further. But farther could I see, could I? Of course. And anyway, since a lot of you are English, although not everyone is English, we'll speak in English as opposed to Hungarian, and that's good for the Hungarian devotees as well. Today's topic is, as you can see here, satisfaction. This is part of our presentation on Varnashram Dharma, or at least one of the many slides. You can see this one is number 19. And just as by way of introduction, Srila Prabhupada had emphasized to his disciples that he wanted the Krishna consciousness movement organized in the social structure that corresponds to the traditional Vedic society, and that traditional Vedic society is Varnashrama. As we all know, we're the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. However, in the absence of a real social structure, we're actually functioning as the International Church for Krishna Consciousness. So we're not really functioning as a society. A society is more than just a religious organization. A church or a synagogue or religious organizations, you can say, are a part of society, but they're a long cry away from being society. And of course, in today's world, religious organizations or churches have a decreasing influence on society at large. So what we have around us, the world that we have around us, is a very spiritually destructive society. It's a materialistic society. And more or less, it's a construct of Kali and the material energy to destroy people's qualifications for spiritual life. And so Srila Prabhupada wanted that we should have a social structure, and society means many things, but we should have a social structure that's conducive for spiritual life. And not only just conducive for spiritual life, but actually boosts one's enthusiasm for spiritual practice. So society is more than just, you may ask, well, what else is there in a society besides having a temple? And society means many things. Education was one. Srila Prabhupada established education. There's also commerce. How do you live? How do you function? How do you exchange? Come in, girls. You can pick your language, whichever one you fit into. And there's also, of course, leadership, or nowadays it's called politics, which is not a really very nice word. Politics really comes from the concept of making policy, people who make policy. And it's not a nice word because people don't need to make policy. God has already made policy, so you don't really need politics. But you do need leadership. So leadership is another aspect of society. So these things are all there, education, commerce, politics, or leadership, and of course, spiritual practice, and there are other aspects to the way that our society also needs to work. But all of these things should have the same ethos, or should have the same purpose. They should have the same purpose, which is ultimately self-realization. We live in a society which is all about economic development, or in more modern terms it's called consumerism. But a Varnashram society, a Krishna consciousness society, is not about economic development. We don't want to develop anywhere as far as economy is concerned. We want to keep with the basic necessities of life. So a Krishna conscious society is about spiritual development. And spiritual development and economic development, they don't really go hand in hand, especially in Kali Yuga. Because the modes of nature, particularly ignorance and passion, are such that if you put too much energy into economic development, you won't have any left for spiritual development. So So in view of this idea that Srila Prabhupada wanted, that we should practically establish Varnashram society, which, as you can see from what I've said, because I haven't even mentioned Varnas and Ashramas yet, and I won't even be talking about them so much today, is more than just about determining who is a Kshatriya, who's a Brahmin, who's a Vaishya, who's a Shudra, and seeing whether devotees, which ashram devotees function in. That's one aspect of dividing society, but you don't get Varnashram just by making divisions. You need to do a lot more than that. That would be very easy if that was all that Varnashram was all about. But along with the divisions, there are responsibilities, and then according to these divisions, people will fit into either a teaching role, either a leadership role, either a commercial role, and other such functions like that. Now, in order to practice Varnashram, you have to have one very important qualification. You have to be a human being. Because Varnashram is for humans. But the qualification for a human being is more than you have two legs and two arms. Or even that you happen to be smart. The qualification for a human being, or rather the qualifications, are listed in Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're 30 in number. So the first 9 are that you have to practice devotional service according to this Nava Anga Bhakti, according to the 9 limbs of devotional service. So that's compulsory for everyone. If you don't practice Krishna consciousness, you're not eligible for Varnashram. And because we're talking about Daivi Varnashram, we're not talking about another type of Varnashram, which was actually even followed by demons like Ravana and Jarasandha and so on. And the other 21 qualities are the ones that we concentrate on because you've had interaction with Krishna consciousness. You always hear about those 9. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Bandhanam, etc. So we're not placing emphasis on those in this lecture, although of course they're the foundation. But what we're doing is actually presenting and reviewing those qualities, one of which is this one here, satisfaction, that qualifies one to actually be a human being. So unless one has these 21 qualities, or at least is in the process of cultivating, thinks that they're important, and is applying themselves to it, they will not think Varnashram is important, and even if they do, they won't be able to practice it. Because everything you need a qualification for, just like if you're going to university, you don't have 5-year-olds walking into university because they haven't been qualified. They haven't gone through grade school and high school. So similarly, if you want to fly an airplane, then you have to have a pilot's license, not just a piece of paper, but you have to have done the whole process of being trained as a pilot. So the qualification for being recognized as a human and also for practicing Varnashram is satisfaction. Excuse me, are these 21 qualities, and satisfaction is one of them, and now we're going to talk about that in the next half hour. Now, the karmis define satisfaction like this. I'm going to need Shambhi Hari to speak very... Anyway, I guess I can read it, since we're speaking through a microphone. This is the definition that you can find in the dictionary. Fulfillment of one's wishes, expectations, or needs, or the pleasure derived from these. So the word satisfaction in Sanskrit is called santosha. And actually tosha even means satisfaction, and santosha means complete satisfaction. So what does it mean to be satisfied? Well, the karmis have this idea that if your desires are fulfilled, if your expectations are fulfilled, and you get pleasure from that, then you're satisfied. You're going to be satisfied. And this is, unfortunately, part of the false propaganda of today's society, which you're all subjected to. I'm talking about guests here who are coming. And that is that whatever you want, you should be able to achieve, and you can be whoever you want to be. And the height of that absurdity is that, for instance, in a democracy, anyone can become the president or the prime minister. And then you see what happens when that actually takes place. So either you get dictators, either you get complete fools. And just because they appeal to a majority sentiment, therefore they get the most powerful leadership position in a country, or even you could say in the world. So this is actually considered to be the real blessing and the pinnacle of liberality. But it's actually the most horrible thing is to actually try to convince everyone that you can be whatever you want to be. So that doesn't even just limit now to profession or some type of future idea, but that means that if you don't like being a woman, you can become a man. If you don't like a man, you can be a woman. If you don't like being a human, you can be a dog. So in other words, you can be anything that you want to be. But there's a little problem with that, is that that's not what the law of karma says. You cannot be anything that you want to be. You can only be what's in your karma. And it is a fact that human beings have the ability that they can stretch their karma. Anyway, if I had a balloon here, I'd step on a balloon. And you know what happens when you step on a balloon, aside from that it may explode. But if you step on the balloon on one side, then the air comes out on the other side. So karma is like that. You can do something here that's not necessarily within your karma, but on the other side, there's only so much air. You only have so much air in your karma. So if you use it up here, then you won't have it here. So this whole idea that people can be anything that they want to be is the ultimate in foolishness and materialism. We are already what we are. And part of this is that, are we satisfied with being what we are? Because very often we're living in a world where we're driven to be so many other things that we don't even have time to think about who we are. And therefore, everyone's in a rush to be this body, whereas they're actually not this body, but their spirit soul. And that makes a real paradigm shift in terms of where you're going. If I'm spirit soul, then it's about spiritual development. And if I'm this body, then it's about consumerism. Here is a very beautiful verse. You can learn this verse. It's from Srimad Bhagavatam. And these verses that we're quoting here, and maybe we'll get through them, maybe we won't. Oh, fine. Yeah, we will. It comes from the 15th chapter of the 7th canto, so you can look it up. And here, this is Narada Muni who's speaking. And he says, Sadasantusha manasa sarva shiva maya disha sharkaya kanta kadibyo yatopanat padashivam. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who's always self-satisfied, there's no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. So it's a very illustrative verse. It shows that it's like, I mean, if you want to walk around New Rajadam barefoot, then you're welcome. But there are thorns, there are pebbles, you know what to do. What happens if you do, for instance, Govardhan Parikrama in Vrindavan? So, but when you wear shoes, which is not necessarily the best thing to do, although that's what people tend to do nowadays more than before when they go on Parikrama, they wear shoes rather than going barefoot. But when you wear shoes, you're not hampered, you're not bothered by all of those other things. The stones, the thorns, the glass, all kinds of other things, or even the hot asphalt under your foot, it doesn't bother you. You notice that Narada Muni doesn't talk about pavement and things like that. He just talks about thorns and rocks. So, in the same way, if someone is wearing these sort of shoes, allegorical shoes of satisfaction, self-satisfaction, then wherever you go, whatever you do, whatever circumstance you're in, you'll always be happy. Because you don't have, or you're not driven by this whip of false expectations of always expecting more, having more, being more, and so on. So I'll come, you'll see this verse repeatedly. Here are different types of satisfaction, and these are not the only ones, but some, and I'm sure you can think of others. One is, which is a very fundamental one, are you actually satisfied being a spirit soul and not this body? Everyone knows the philosophy, but if we really know the philosophy, do we do things that are very much bodily oriented, despite the fact that we know that we're spirit soul? There are certain things that we have to do, for instance, eating. Soul doesn't need to eat, but that doesn't help us, because unless we feed the body, we're not going to be able to become self-realized, so we have to eat. But there's a question of what it is that we eat. Do we eat the things that we need, or do we eat the things that we want? Because when we start eating things that we want, and we start eating in unregulated ways, and when we start eating something other than Krishna prasadam, then eating becomes a conflict to self-realization. So for instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, if you don't eat prasadam, your mind becomes wicked. Because then you're eating karma. And you're eating whatever it is that some materialistic people cooked. What to speak of eating all kinds of food that's unhealthy. And it contaminates our body. It contaminates our consciousness. So being satisfied with spirit, soul, and not this body, because to actually have a very strong identification, spiritual identification, means that people will lead a very different life than when they know that they're not this, when they're this body, or when they think that they're this body, or even when they make a compromise between the two. Because there may be many people who know that they're not this body, and yet at the same time, they're not dedicating themselves to self-realization. And that dedication may be a full-time job. It may mean that you don't have time for many other things. I don't know, like going to university, for instance, or getting a job. Because Krishna consciousness is a full-time job. It's full-time education. It's not even, you know, you can go to university for 4 years, 5 years, and get a pretty good professional. If you want to be a doctor, it may take 10 years. Krishna consciousness isn't that easy as being like a neurosurgeon. So this is about heart surgery. And the trick is you have to be able to do it on yourself. So doing an operation on someone else is one thing. Doing an operation on yourself is something else. And so it really takes about 100 years, 24/7, to be successful in Krishna consciousness. It's by no means a part-time job. So are we satisfied with being spirit soul? And goes along with this that the goal of life is self-realization and not sense gratification. A very important question in the world that we live in is, are we satisfied by living according to what we need? Because when we're not, then we're taking away what other people need. And that's the reality of the fact. We live in a Western world, and it's not just a Western world, but it's spreading to other parts of the world, which is a world of excess. And because we live in a world of excess, therefore we're placing other people in a world of want. So 5 million children, just children, forget about the adults, but 5 million children starve, die of starvation and malnutrition every year. So here in the West, we get really uptight if some terrorist blows up 3 people, I don't know, in Stockholm or something like that, or in Madrid. But the fact that 5 million children die of starvation, no one blinks an eye. So are we satisfied by living according to what we really need? And it may be very surprising what it is that we really need. You know, Ayurveda suggests that this is all we need to put into our stomachs. Well, according to how big you are, your hand is corresponding size. So 2 fists, one is the air and the other one is the water and the food, and that's all that we need. That's not necessarily how we live. Satisfied with our karma. And that's what we mentioned earlier. Are we satisfied with being who we are, with getting what we deserve, or are we going to get into this catch-22 situation where we're trying to get more, but by getting more, we end up actually getting less. And we get less, actually, than our karma, because we're also committing sinful activities, and therefore we get entangled and we get deprived of what we need. Being satisfied with our nature and ability, and I touched on that, so I won't go into that in any more detail. People have, if you talk in terms of Varna Ashram terms, we have our own Varna. And some people are very, very good business people, and they're good at making money. Unfortunately, there's not enough of those in Krishna consciousness. Other people are good at leading. Other people are very studious and are natural teachers. Other people are very expert in handicrafts, building, assisting others, and so on. It's sometimes a real psychological thing. If I ask, not I don't have time right now, but if I ask who thinks that they're a Shudra, some people may take that as being an offense. So what do you mean that we're a Shudra? But everyone has a different nature. And there's nothing wrong with being a Shudra. In fact, according to Shastra, in Kali Yuga, you've already gone up a notch if you've already achieved the level of being a Shudra, because Kalo Shudra Sambhavan, or actually Narada Muni later says that actually in Kali Yuga everyone's a barbarian. So if you're a barbarian, then everything is up from there. Because only barbarians eat cows. And many of the devotee children here never did that, but those who aren't did. And that's called barbaric life. And then of course, it's like you go outside in the outside world, everyone's dressed in black. Barbarians dress in black. It's a message. What you dress in is a message. Black, the color black, aside from Krishna, although it's not exactly black, but it's sort of cloud blue. But black is darkness, and darkness means ignorance. So it's sort of representative of what's going on. And I was satisfied with our tradition. And it's a very important question because there's this concept of modern or modernity. And it's a relatively new concept that entered, something that didn't really exist up until about 200 years ago. And sort of modern means that what we have today is better than what we had yesterday, and tomorrow is we're going to have better things than today because we're always improving. We're always improving what we think, we're always improving our education, we're always improving our values, we're always becoming more liberal and giving more rights to everybody. Everything is always changing. And another way of saying that is that people are always looking towards the future. Now, Krishna consciousness, you probably noticed, is that we're always looking to the past. We're talking about Srimad Bhagavatam. Why do we refer to something that was 5,000 years old? And I'm sure you've had that experience. If you're talking to somebody, they say, well, what's the relevance of this Bhagavad Gita? It's outdated, it's 5,000 years old. But what about today? But that's actually our whole approach. If what was said 5,000 years ago is the truth, why do you need anything modern? There's no such thing as modern truth. You may have to present it in a different language. We're having to translate the Sanskrit into English and other languages. And you may have to put it into a certain type of context in order to make it relevant to people and understandable to people, but the principle is no change. So that's called traditionalist as opposed to being modernist. And that's a very important thing to choose because in terms of values and education, outlook on life, our outlook is, and that's why we're talking about Varnashram. We're not talking about a new social structure. We're not talking about democracy or even mundane monarchy. We're talking about something that is eternal. So Krishna says, Tasya kartaram apimam vidhi akartaram avayam. He says, I established the system. It's an eternal system. And this is how people may want to say they live in a democracy, but that's not the case. You see that in a democracy, you've got leaders, you've got people who make money, you have people who are laborers, and you have educators. It's there. And you've got students, you've got people who are married, and then people go to, they retire. So varnas and ashramas exist, albeit in quite a lopsided or contaminated state. So in terms of satisfaction of self-realization, this is one quote that you can see Krishna says in the Gita, and I won't quote the Sanskrit. He says, one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who's satisfied in the self, fully satiated, for him there's no duty. So Krishna's emphasizing that a person no longer has any obligation in terms of development, going through the system of karma yoga, jnana yoga, etc. A person who's already satisfied and is situated in his own spiritual identity, then that person, as the earlier verse stated, he's happy wherever he is and whatever he does. And therefore his primary duty is actually pursuing the path of self-realization. Krishna also talks about being satisfied with what you need. He who's satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord. Here you see the word santosha, santushto. So think about that, gain that comes of its own accord. Of course, that isn't meant to mean that you're just sitting in one place and whatever comes to you, that you'll accept. That's also a practice. There are some very serious spiritual practitioners. Madhavendra Puri is an example. He would never cook for himself or ask for food. He just had faith. Krishna's in everybody's heart. If he wants to tell someone else, here's the sadhu, take him something to eat, then he'll do it. And if he doesn't, then I don't eat. And that was Madhavendra Puri's vow. Now, we're not meant to do that. But on the other hand, we're not meant to actually go out of our way. And in English, that's a good terminology, going out of your way. What's our way? Our way is going to Krishna. So our way is self-realization. So anything that takes you off the path of self-realization, that then means that we're actually going out of our way. Rather, whatever comes while we're practicing Krishna consciousness, that we should be satisfied with. Which means that one person is going to be a millionaire and someone else is going to be a pauper. Sudama Vipra was satisfied with being a pauper, although he was a Brahmin. And he could have gone out and begged. And even when finally he went to Krishna, he just couldn't get himself to do it. It was just not his dharma. He couldn't bring himself to ask, because it would betray his values that I just want to be dependent on. Krishna knows anyway, so why should I ask? So being satisfied with that which comes of its own accord. Now, Narada Muni gives a whole series of verses, and I'm just going to go through those and wrap up. Go through a series of verses which really talks about this concept of being satisfied with the material necessities of life, not being excessively greedy, not wanting too much, not wanting that which you don't need. And he also talks about what the consequences are when we do that. So I'll read. He says, even if a man is poor, he should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together or to become a famous religionist. Just as a great python, although lying in one place, not endeavoring for its livelihood, gets the food it needs to maintain body and soul, one who is desireless also obtains his livelihood without endeavor. The analogy is very good. Different animals have different paths. Carnivores, they have their own path. And, you know, like rabbits have their own path and deers have their own path. And those that are feeding off others, they know where to wait. So, for instance, this python goes on the deer's path. And he lies there. Now, he doesn't just open his mouth and expect the deer to walk into his mouth by mistake. So that's taking it a little too far. But he lies on the path and he hides himself well enough that he's within striking distance, that when he sees a deer, he can catch it. So, but he doesn't go around hunting, he doesn't go wandering around the jungle, he just stays in that one place. So here the idea of depending on Krishna means you do have to make some effort, but you have to use your intelligence not to go out of your way. And out of your way means don't go off the path, don't go off the path of Krishna consciousness. You don't have time. Then he says, one who is content and satisfied and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead residing in everyone's heart enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed and who therefore wanders in all directions with a desire to accumulate wealth? So, it's very instructive. Narada here says that there's a greater pleasure to be had by being satisfied with what you need, then this madness of pursuing unlimited, some kind of phantasmagoria, of trying to get more than what you want. And here is impelled by lust and greed. These are two of the three gates. Krishna says, Trividham Narakasidam. There are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And anger comes when you don't get these things, or you don't fulfill your desires. Lust and greed, this is what today's society is about. It's to make you as lusty as possible. You may have noticed that it works quite well. And it's to make you as greedy as possible. And lust and greed are things which are very counterproductive for spiritual life. Spiritual life means we want to give these things up. So, person who's completely, and even these very, very wealthy people, they don't necessarily have peace of mind, and they're also not happy. If you know any, then you can ask them, and if they're honest, they'll tell you. But let's go on. Then he says the same verse, for a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there's no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there's no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. How do you become satisfied? Well, it's a sadhana. It's like chanting japa. You have to practice being satisfied. You have to learn how to become satisfied. See the pleasure that comes from that satisfaction and continue to cultivate it. Then he goes on. A self-satisfied person can be happy even only with only drinking water. However, one who is driven by the senses, especially by tongue and genitals, must accept the position of a household dog to satisfy his senses. So he's, you know, Bhagavatam doesn't mince words. Srimad Bhagavatam is very straightforward. So a person who simply just follows his mind and senses, as you're brainwashed to do in school and university, and that's the whole function of modern society, to convince you that you have to do that. Literally speaking, one becomes a dog. A dog is someone going around and smelling everywhere and sticking his nose in unbelievably filthy things. So that's what our materialistic society is about. You stick your nose anywhere where you think that there's going to be some kind of sense enjoyment. Okay, and now he says, what's the result of not being satisfied? Because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee or a Brahmin who is not self-satisfied dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes. So unless one learns how to practice this satisfaction and acquire, be self-satisfied, your spiritual strength, you dissipate your spiritual strength, your real education, spiritual education, austerity, reputation, it's gone. The strong bodily desires and needs of a person disturbed by hunger and thirst are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and his reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied. So there's this common saying that you can never satisfy a greedy person even if he acquires the whole world. And here, this is actually the statement. One example of that is Hiranyakashipu. He had more than the world, he had the whole universe. And still he wasn't satisfied. Because desires never become satisfied by simply fulfilling them or trying to fulfill them. Rather, one just wants more and more and more. So here one becomes earlier was stated, a household dog would become a slave of the desires. Then he's concluding, O King Yudhisthira, many persons with varied experience, legal advisors, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions. So ultimately, not being satisfied with who we are, where we are, our limitations and our abilities leads to hellish life. So, as I mentioned, these were the six different types of satisfaction that I'd mentioned earlier. And Krishna summarizes this in the Gita. He says, Santushta Dina Kenachit, Santushto Dina Kenachit. Just be satisfied with anything and everything. And here is the verse that you've already seen twice. And that's it. We're right on time. So, Hare Krishna, this some food for thought, satisfaction, and now I think there's food for the body, which is prasada. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.